Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
Hello, Ivy Podcast listeners. Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of the Ivy Podcast. I am your host, Angela Alberti. And if you know me, you know that I'm about the workforce ecosystem and female empowerment. And certainly that is the treat that we have for you guys for today. So I wanted to thank our listeners, but also thank Marcia Studio for being a part of our Ivy Podcast. Marcia, can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I'm definitely excited to be here. As you mentioned, my name is Marcia Custodio. I've been in the IT staffing world since 1998, so I'm dating myself a little bit. I've been with my current organization for a little over 15 and a half years, primarily in a sales role. I currently live and especially grew up in San Antonio, Texas, but have lived in Phoenix, Miami, New Zealand. But it took me living in all those places to appreciate San Antonio. So this has definitely been home for the last 15 and a half years. I have a partner named George and a 17-year-old son named Jedi. Oh, and a cat named Odin. Can't leave Odin out, right? There's a lot of testosterone in the house.
Shout out to the cat. Yes, he's running things. Yes. Well, we're so excited to speak with you today. I think we're going to be able to go over so much, but one of the things I like to start off with is just a deeper dive into your career. I always feel like this is an industry that doesn't necessarily, you don't go to school for it or with the intention of it or growing up wanting to be in it. So can we start off with how this industry found you and a little bit more of the transgression into the role that you play now?
Absolutely. So to your point, I originally was going to go to school because I had since the fifth grade dreams and hopes to be an OBGYN. Which were quickly thwarted, I would say, my first semester in the school. I was like, how much more do I have to do as far as schooling? Because I'm a very, I like people. I like to socialize. And so I was like, how soon can I start my life? Yeah. So I went to A&M. I got my marketing degree. And at the time, you know, there was a business office. I know now everything's online because this is, you know, when the internet was first making an appearance onto campuses where we still had to go and stand in line for the computer room. So in our business office, your senior year, you would apply, you'd put your paper, you know, your nice parchment paper resume into the different little slides or buckets of companies that were going to come visit, right? And at the time, I had been visiting some girlfriends in Phoenix as they were wrapping up their university studies. And I was like, this would be a really neat place to live. Like, I would love to come to Phoenix because living in San Antonio at the time, you know, it was to me, you know, and I love San Antonio now, let me be very clear. It was boring, right? Yeah. I wanted to live that big city life. So I wanted to explore what my job options were. So one of those interviews was actually with a company we all know as Allegis Group. So Tech Systems. And I was like, I'm geographically flexible, but I'm interested in knowing, you know, what you potentially have in the Phoenix area. I was like, I'm willing to fly myself. I'm willing to interview. So that already was like captivated them. Right. They didn't realize I was flying for free because my mom worked for American Airlines as a pilot.
I don't even know that.
But they didn't even know that. Right. So I was like very motivated. I was like, cause I essentially my ground rules, if you will, for where I wanted to live and work was I want to know at least one person, but it can't be a family member. Like I really wanted to have that kind of adult experience. So I went, I interviewed, they immediately gave me an offer, literally crossed the stage, started my job 2 weeks later. I bought a car, packed the car and drove from San Antonio to Phoenix to start my adventure in IT, which as even when I was interviewing, I'm like, what is this thing that you're talking about? Like, how do I make money?
What am I going to be doing?
Exactly. And
what a leap of faith though, right?
It was. And I think that it's always been ingrained in me is just that, you know, that no fear sometimes to, you know, my detriment, but I think that's also helped pave the way and open some doors. Right, you know, I definitely don't let that hold me back, but that's how I essentially entered into this market. At the time, you know, I thought I was going to be living in Phoenix for a number of years. So I had plans to go to the Grand Canyon and all these things. That the only thing I really got to do outside of obviously the immediate city area and going to Sedona and Vegas, I didn't do the Grand Canyon, but I was promoted and within 11 months, and that's how I ended up in Miami. Wow. So it took me to Miami. That's a whole another subset of my story, which we can get into, but I know you asked that first question, so we'll stop there.
Wow. So, okay. So you took a leap of faith, moving from your hometown across Phoenix, right into staffing, went to Miami, got the fast track promotion. But let's fast forward a little bit to what you're doing now, and how the connection to AGS went into your current role, because I know that it's with ACOTIS now. So how does how did that connect?
So ACOTIS, formerly known as MODIS, because I know some people are still getting used to the name change. They actually, I think during CEO, were like, is that your own company? I was like,
yeah,
I wish.
Selfishly, I had to stop myself and not say MODIS, but I did it. Yeah, there you go.
Yes, thank you. So, you know, there's a lot of experiences that basically went from my initial to now, you know, inclusive of some economical, you know, shifts in our world, both having to do with the .com right bus. Well, let me back up. Y2K, .com bus, as well as 9/11, right? And so there was about a 5-year hiatus that I explored, you know, a different avenue and industry, which is personal training. But essentially, you know, when I came back into the country, because I had literally moved from New Zealand at the time because I decided to get a divorce. And so my then baby, who's, you know, now 17, he was a year and a half, and I had 7 boxes to my name, and I had to start my life essentially over. So when I went out to put my resume, I got a lot of pings from staffing companies, right? And I was just like, really? Okay. You know, that I go, let me re-engage, re-explore this. And so that opportunity presented itself, and MODIS at the time had just opened a branch. So it was brand new, you know, which was also very appealing. I felt like I was starting over. That branch was starting from fresh, right? I wasn't going and backfilling somebody. I wasn't filling someone's shoes or, you know, mending fences. You know, it was going to be me, myself, and I. And essentially, that's how I got into that role. But fast forward 14 years, we developed an academy. So it's an upskilling and reskilling solution. So the opportunity to, you know, advance in my career and have more of a national type of role presented itself. And so that is what I'm currently doing now. I'm the director of sales for all of North America and Canada.
Wow. That's awesome. You know, very cool to see the transgression and overall scaling in your career. And you really starting with that 7 boxes and taking the leap of faith, moving to Phoenix, moving to New Zealand, having the baby, getting the divorce, getting back into your career and getting back into staffing at one of the largest staffing companies out there, and being able to grow into the role that you're in now is, I know, enlightening. And as part of the Female Empowerment Series, I'd love to know, you know, what advice would you give the very early on in her career female, perhaps the one that's in this industry, when it comes to growing? What do you think helped you always take that next right step through that entire career trajectory?
Well, it's definitely a learning and growing experience. So definitely what I would advise now that I've come to the point where I'm at now, right? If you don't know where you want to go, that's okay, right? Mm-hmm. Learn in the position you're in. As soon as you do know, let people know, right? Yeah. Speak up, find advocates, find allies, ask questions, be curious. If you're not getting the answers from your direct management, seek them elsewhere. Right. That if that is your only source of information, you know, sometimes that source can be broken for whatever reason. So, you know, continue. Don't stop at a no. Keep looking for the yes, and give yourself a little grace. Right. You know, life isn't perfect. It's not a straight line. And we're not perfect either. So, you know, just pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and know tomorrow is a new day. So, that's what I would share.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. We know that the path for a female is not the same as their male counterparts. And finding that ally, finding that advocate, having enough confidence in yourself to represent yourself and being able to communicate your goals, I think is a hard time that perhaps women more often have struggled with, that confidence, that knowing when to ask for a raise, knowing that you want to do this and this is your goal with the company. It's not instilled in us as organically as our male counterparts, I would say. So some awesome advice, and also know to ask questions, right? I think that that's very, very powerful in today's world. I'd like to expand a little bit more into the role that you're playing in right now and some of those conversations perhaps that you have with your own clients. A lot of what you guys do is consultative. It's not just filling requisitions, it's building programs for successful oversight of contingent talent, which is a huge spin for any company nowadays. But what conversations are you having with your clients that can say, this is how you get more females into that space? Diversity is top of mind for everyone. How do you tell, or how do you give the right advice on best practices when expanding the candidate pool?
Well, first of all, to your point, it's all about how we do it. How do we attract and how do we retain? Right. Yeah. And what I like to, you know, because every client, you know, is looking for a diverse workforce, right? It's always this goal. And I always let a client know, well, what is the plan to get to that goal? Because if you don't have a plan to execute and achieve that goal, then it's just a wish, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's not a light switch or a flip that you can turn on and be like, we're diverse, yay, right? So I let people know up front that this takes time and patience, and it takes everybody at all levels to be in on that plan, right? And so that's how I essentially set the stage and really kind of work through where are you now, where are you trying to go, and how can we help you navigate that, you know, from execution to implementation, right? And just really a true end-to-end solution. But it is a partnership, right? And again, it takes time and it takes education, right? Because it really starts with that job description. And something that, you know, I learned myself over the last year and a half is, you know, there's more and more companies popping up that are actually going, offering the service to review your job description. You know, is it, you know, a neutral type of language, right? Is it already setting the stage for you to capture a wider, more diverse audience, right? Then fast forward, if someone does apply, you know, how are we taking that unbiased, conscious, you know, syndrome, if you will, out of the whoever's reading those resumes and selecting those candidates to move forward? And then fast forward to that, you know, is that panel diverse, right? Can that person see themselves in that company by that interview experience? Right. And then once they are in, what are you doing to maintain and develop and grow that diverse talent? Right. Because it doesn't stop there just because you've taken the unbiasedness of the hiring process. Right. Where's the care and nurturing once they're in the organization for them to feel like they belong? Right. That they do have access. Right. So it's a multi-pronged approach. And it really starts with asking some hard questions. And people have to look themselves in the mirror, you know, because sometimes they don't know what they don't know. And it's not because I don't, you know, in my heart of hearts think that people are being malicious. They just really don't know, right? That's why I think reverse mentoring is really important. It's not just about, hey, this is how I got here, right? No, how about turning around and saying, what's been your experience, right? What have been your challenges? Because I've noticed that when I've shared mine, people are like, really? They're confused. They're like, that didn't happen to me. I'm like, well, just because it didn't happen to you doesn't mean it didn't happen, right? Yeah. So you have to honor and validate people's experiences and learn from that, right? And take that feedback and essentially try and, you know, educate everyone along the way on how to improve that process. But it takes time. So essentially those are the conversations that we have to have, you know, with our clients. And, you know, more and more clients are obviously opening their hearts and minds to, you know, knowing that they have to change because the data's out there. Right. The motivating thing for corporations is they know that having a diverse workforce improves profitability. Right. So at the end of the day, everybody's, you know, they're in a for-profit business. So if someone tells them, hey, if you do this, you're going to make more money. They're like, oh, OK. All of a sudden, they're like, let's pay attention to that.
Yeah, I love that. So. No, I mean, absolutely. And it's beyond just the ethical grounds. There's some serious business incentive for us to lift these things off the ground. But historically, if we think about, you know, the retainment of talent and how some of those quote unquote benefits are so vastly evolving from traditional models of just the health insurance and the 401k and the PTO a year. No, we have a generation now that is going to look into a company's background and see what they're doing for diverse, or maybe mm-hmm. some issues that they're passionate about, or maybe even taking the time to invest into their internal team and upskill and cross skill them. And I know that that's an area that you guys are specializing in, specifically under your purview. Can you talk through a little bit more of, sure. you know, that the upskilling and first of all, how important it is for this future millennial Gen Z or generation?
Absolutely. So the data out there also supports top of the list, right? Top thing that candidates, you know, and the current talent out there that they're seeking is career acceleration, career advancement, career development, right? So if you don't have programs currently, right, that care and nurture and develop those individuals to advance to the next level of the career, those are the things that people are looking at. Like, do you have this? To your point, do you have diversity programs? You know, is that something you're investing in to make sure that there is a diverse culture, there is a diverse workforce, that there's support groups for that, right? So as far as what we implement and what we provide is in that retention, is this talking about where is this role now, right? But what's the next step of this role, right? What is the evolution of this role? How can we instill the skills now while they're in their current role so that they're primed and ready for the next role? Because that's what people want to know. They're not just interested in what this role responsibility is. They're like, what's after this? Right? What does this pathway to, right? And having that clear line of sight, that clear, you know, again, succession planning at its best, right, is what people want to hear and know about when it comes to evaluating or interviewing with a potential, I want to say client, but organization, right, if they're interviewing for a role.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And obviously one of the best ways to do that is through offering and lending itself to a great upskilling program, a company that's going to take the time and the investment to make sure that, you know, the expertise of the candidate is looking to expand on a continual nature. And that's certainly one way to do it. Now, you know, I want to stem from our last question and knowing how quickly the candidate pool is evolving into what they're considering top priority benefits. So is the world of work and the manner in which we deploy and deliver talent now. What do you think about some of the ideologies entrenched through the future of work and how, you know, commonplace it is going to be for us within 5 years on the future of work and where we're going to be sitting and what we're going to be talking about then?
So I know there's a lot of, you know, technology that's coming out, right, and automating certain processes. But, you know, I'm old school, and I think this is just at the core of what we do. We're human-centric. You can't automate that. You can't automate relationships. You can't automate a marriage, right? You can't automate your relationship
yet.
With your kids.
I haven't figured that one out yet. Maybe we're onto something on this episode.
I'm open, right? I'm open to the future, and, you know, I might be surprised, right?
That's right.
But, you know, it's always going to be at the core of what we do. So I think there's always going to be room to invent and reinvigorate and, you know, transform how we deliver, you know, and how we develop those relationships. But I think at the core that you can't ever take that part out. You can't take this, like you and I communicating right now. That's how you get to know people, you know, and vice versa. You build connections. That's how you build your network, right? And that's essentially how you also build your career, right? I always tell people your network is your net worth. Right. So, you know, as far as the future of work, you know, if especially if you want to come work in this industry, if you don't like working with people, maybe not the right place for you. Right. You know, if you avoid the phone and you're like, I don't want to talk to anybody, or I want to just hide behind my email and my text, maybe, you know, there's could potentially be roles for you within the organization, but anything that's perhaps candidate or client facing, not going to be the right match. Right. Okay. So, So I know there's, you know, I mean, I've seen some amazing technology out there that relates to staffing, you know, and I know there's a lot of, it's all about speed to market, right? And how do we get someone, you know, from, you know, 1 week to the next to start, right? How do we pay them faster? Those are all fantastic things. And I think we're going to continue to see advancements there. But essentially, you know, truly having the care, feeding and nurturing part, you know, even after you place someone, that still needs to be there, right? Because I think that really lends to someone being engaged, right? Being retained. They want to feel that they're taken care of. They want to feel that they're being invested in, right? And so letting them know that they have a support network that's truly invested in them having the best outcomes in their career really changes the conversation in the game, you know, especially in the world right now. You know, everybody talks about no one's loyal anymore, right? Well, you know, maybe we need to invest a little, we need to focus on less about the profits and more on the person, right? Yeah. And the profits will take care of themselves, yeah. Right? So then we might see a little bit more of a return to loyalty, right? Because people are loyal to people. They're not loyal to a tool or to an organization. They're loyal to that person or persons, right?
Wow. That's powerful. It's very true. And you know, it's going back to our human side, and this is a very human, I mean, it's human capital at the end of the day. It's been coined as human capital, but certainly the truth behind that. What do you think are some of those, like, okay, so take it back to like when you were at like 97 and like just getting started at Allegis, and some of the things that you guys would do in your day to day. I think it was the smile and dial era and like,
yeah, the carefrontation.
Yes.
That was my favorite one. I was like, that's a really nice way to talk about how we're going to argue.
That's funny. Yeah. I have heard about the carefrontation before, but do you think that some of those principles still apply to what you guys are doing on the front line every single day back then that would still make use of it now?
So yeah, I definitely think that you got to pick up the phone. You got to stay in front of your client, right? That's not going to go away, right? That's instilled in you. I mean, I was
not this automated chatbot tool that's going
to
make.
No, I mean, I get upset when I see that when I go somewhere else. I was like, I want to talk to a person. Like, this isn't going to answer my questions, right? So, you know, or when I'm on the phone, I'm like dialing zero over and over to get to the live person.
Yeah.
I mean, going back to, you know, 1998, I mean, we were still faxing resumes. Right. So whoever got to the office first was the one that was able to grab the resumes off the fax machine. Right. Like the whoever was submitting themselves to our opportunity. So I think it definitely, you know, the training that I got there to really, you know, essentially hustle. Right. I think was instilled very early in the right person, because I was just I already had that makeup in myself. You know, I think of how perhaps certain exchanges were encouraged or not encouraged. There was definitely room for improvement, right? Because it was definitely, it was wild. I'll just say that. It was a very wild experience.
Wild West, right? I think of, what's that movie, The Boiler Room, where like they're all just like in this office, like picking up the phone and faxing. And
Well, have you seen the show Industry right now? It's on HBO. So when I see it, it gives me kind of vibes of, you know, the early staffing days. It's not, you know, tit for tat, but it's just like, okay, the undertones are equivalent to that. So it has its place. It doesn't have its place anymore, I can tell you that. But that was really the seed, right? Yeah. From staffing. And there's still some bad habits from that, I will say, right? And it's essentially having more of diversity is going to help kind of, you know, unwind those and balance that, right? There's still some work to be done, 100%.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, but here's the thing. I think you simplified it perfectly. You just got to be able to pick up the phone, right? This is, I think, those that find most success are the ones that are willing to have that human connection, that human interaction. And usually that involves, you know, not sitting behind a screen. All right. So I want to fast forward now. We took the early days. Let's shift to the pandemic, right? And what that did to your organization and what you think it's going to do to the world of work in general, as we now are growing from that and separate. And of course, there's all these other economic climactic things happening. But what were some of the things that you guys went through in navigating the pandemic and that are still with you guys to this day?
Sure. I'm going to give it to you from two different perspectives. One, what I noticed what it did with my clients and my book of business.
Right.
And the other one, how it impacted us internally as an organization. It was the silver lining. I'm going to focus on what the silver lining was, because I had primarily worked in the San Antonio market industry in staffing. And it's a unique market. Every market's unique. right? Everybody that wants to say that, you know, broad stroke and, you know, talk about industries, and no, you have to look at the market. And one of the things that this market was very much known for is butts and seats. Like if they didn't see them, they weren't there. So the whole remote work was something that scared a lot of organizations here, right? They wanted to have, you know, eyeballs that they could look at, right? And so what the pandemic did was force a lot of organizations to adopt remote work. And what it did is create a business case to show a proof of concept that it does work, that people do perform, right? That it is okay, right? So I think it just opened up the doors for us to cast a wider net for candidates, right? Because now someone can sit somewhere else, right? They don't have to sit in market, right? They can be, you know, if they're San Antonio, they can sit in Austin, or they can sit in the middle of the country, wherever they want, right? You know, out in the middle of West Texas, right? So that was nice to see, because I always was a big proponent to having people adopt remote work, because finding IT candidates in San Antonio was always a challenge, right? We're not, you know, we don't have all these IT headquarters here, right? So finding, it's very limited. You can count perhaps on two hands, right? The ones that have really robust IT shops. So everything else is small to medium. Right. What it did internally, similar in the sense that, you know, before the traditional staffing model was, you know, you work a territory, you know, you go for a recruiter to sales, maybe you go to branch manager. If you really want to advance, you needed to be mobile, you needed to move to another city because you had to be in market, right? You had to be in that market or work in that market. And so that wasn't really viable for me being a single mom, right? Because I was here with my support network, right? So, you know, my options to be promoted or to move along in that trajectory were limited based on my scenario, right? Wow. So the pandemic really took the barriers off, right? You know, the kind of like the bowling lanes, right? The bumpers.
Bumpers, right? Yeah, that's right.
Really took that off. And now, you know, we have recruiters that, you know, sit in New York, but they're working on, you know, they work for the Atlanta branch, right? You know, or vice versa, right? So, and what that also has done is I noticed that we are just became, even though we were always a global company, I think we've just had more visibility to global leaders because now we did have this remote work, right? We were behind on a screen, so we were able to partake and listen to town halls. And really, I think it built more of a sense of community where you didn't feel siloed just to your market. So I think from a unity perspective, right, from a global organization, but also from an ability to advance in your career and not be limited geographically, as I've seen a huge, huge change, obviously in the positive direction.
That's awesome. I mean, and you certainly are a testimony to that. I think that's been the crux of what has been the overall benefit of the pandemic and the way that we think that work should be delivered every single day with the kids in the background and the cat. What's the cat's name?
Odin.
Odin. Yes. Yeah. Odin in the background during
the father of four. Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
That's funny. I want to reference something that you just mentioned on and the limitations that were in your career as a single mother. Can you walk us through that? I mean, maybe kicking it back to when you first got back into the industry, divorced, mother, you know, trying to find her way and what that experience has been like for you, and any advice that you would give to perhaps mothers or even single mothers that are listening in on today's episode on how to balance their career.
Sure. I give all the glory and the thanks to my family. I mean, they've always been a strong support system for me. So my immediate family, my parents and my grandparents live here in San Antonio. So it was just a natural thing for me to want to come back here, especially when you have a child, right? I'm Puerto Rican, you know, Hispanic, like just like, I want to go home. I want to go with mommy and poppy, right? Yeah. So for me to come here, it really gave me the lift and support that I needed to essentially restart my life, right? And give a life to my son, right? Because I knew I was going to be the one financially responsible for all of it, right? Yeah. And I was okay to obviously take that on. So I had to start over. And having the opportunity with Modus, what it was called at the time, and just being in sales, I think having that sales type of role provided me the flexibility because my son also was diagnosed with severe ADHD. So there was times there, you know, before, you know, we went down the medicinal route, that I was going to the principal's office 2 to 3 times a week in the middle of the day, you know? I mean, I have the pink sheets to prove it. But because my role had the flexibility, as long as I was, you know, meeting my metrics, meeting the sales quota, I was able to go and tend to my child, right? So that was a blessing, right? So I always tell people that, you know, Modus was good to me and continues to be, and I was, you know, good to them, right? And so I could help facilitate, but it's hard. It was a struggle. I mean, I still remember, you know, driving him to school. I think it was, he'd already been to pre-K and all that, but I think it was first grade. And I was like, how many days, how many more years do I have to do this? You know, because there's days where it turns into like, you're like, you get overwhelmed, right? Yeah. And that's natural, right? I tell people, I go, if you feel that, it's natural, but you know, the next day is a new day, and you just do one day at a time. That's all you can do. And just, you know, my son, I always say, is the person that saved my life and helped me pivot from a unhealthy relationship, because I was essentially saying, what am I teaching him by staying here? Right. And so I knew that by leaving and starting a new life, thankfully with the strong help and support of my family, that I was choosing him over everything else. And that's what was important. So, you know, you have to find your purpose. And for me, it was him and making sure that he had a healthy experience in life, because it's so impactful when they're young. And so that's what helped me, right, is always making sure I knew what my purpose was, what was guiding me. And those are the things that helped me. And exercise. I got really into CrossFit. FYI.
It was your you time, right? Everyone needs them. You didn't have the emails or the kid or you know, all the other things that you're managing. So that is awesome. Mm-hmm. What an inspiring story. You gave me goosebumps with that one. Oh. I mean, it's really amazing to hear about the sacrifices that you've made for your son. And it may be even so indirectly, if you think about the contributions that maybe what your career has done to improving the way that we look and conceptualize how work is. What are some of those hopes that you have? What's your son's Jedi? I think you said, right?
Jedi.
His name's Jedi. Name.
Okay, yeah. So
what are some of those hopes that you have in Jedi's future on work and the workplace, and how that's going to be different from the workplace that you had?
I am so excited for him and his generation. I already see it in how he is as a human and how he interacts with his peers. Like they're really careful about how they speak to one another, right? And they really there's less judgment. There's less, you know, I would say cliques, if you will, of categorizing people into, well, you're this and you're that and I'm that, right? So I'm excited to see when his age group becomes not just in the workforce, but leaders. I think that's where we're going to see the biggest shifts and change in the positive direction, right? I feel like they're the ones that are going to be the change makers, 100%.
Yeah. Oh, and can you imagine like empathetic leadership? I think it's such a newer concept, right? Yeah. And you know, the one that shows compassion and empathy and vulnerability.
At the end of the day, allowing them to be that, right?
Yeah. And how, even in my career, I think about that. That's never kind of like the leaders that I knew of. They were always strong, stern, direct, and about the hustle. And now it's like empathetic, compassion, and vulnerable. And it's like, are we talking about the leadership? But that's awesome. That's great feedback. So, you know, as we're wrapping up today's episode, I wanted to just talk to you about, you mentioned, you know, a healthy lifestyle, and just as much as a healthy lifestyle, I think, is the content that we consume constantly. You know, we're in this digital world of news and inundated updates, especially through our phones. What are some of the things that you like to stay on top of when it comes to your content diet, perhaps in the industry or books that you're reading up on right now?
So daily news, I like to stay on top of what it is that's going on, you know, trends, obviously work trends, industry trends, but I'm very passionate about seeing what just data that's supporting the business that I'm in from an upskilling, reskilling solution. But what I've gotten more so into now is, and I say more so because it's always been a passion of mine, but it's just really get into the DEI topics, like how to not only do my part, but how do I educate and reinforce that in others. And because a lot of people are data driven, right? They sometimes, you know, they're still not open to just, you know, feelings, right? And experiences. It's like, okay, well, then we'll just kind of have to use some data, right? To further express my feelings and my experience. And all of my stuff, to your point, it does come from articles or white papers that are online. You know, one of the books I just picked up right now is, which is my partner recommended. He reads, he's a bookworm. I wish I could just read 10% of what he reads, it would be a whole new world. But it's the first 90 days of public office. Nice. So just essentially, you know, anything you pick up, you can obviously align it or attribute it to what you're doing in some way, shape, or form. So it's really about what kind of things you need to do within the first 90 days of whether that's a new role, an initiative, or a project. So that's something that's currently on my bedstand.
Nice. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Where can we find you? Where can we get in touch with you? And actually, just so the audience gets a heads up, Marcia and I connected because you were on a panel at the Gig Economy Conference, and it was over, you know, what some of the topics that we talked about today, including DE&I. And that's how we've connected. I think that our story is a testimony to expanding your network and getting in touch. As soon as I saw you on there and I saw you talking about some of those changes and being so direct in the manner that you had those experiences that led to that, I said, we've got to get Marcia on the podcast. So thank you for being on the podcast. But if our audience wants to find you, and knowing that we're in staffing, we will.
Yes.
Where can we get in touch with you?
Well, LinkedIn, the beauty of my name is that if you Google me, I shoot straight to the top because there's not a lot of custodios out there.
Yeah.
Fun fact, when we would travel, that was one of my little games. I would go to the yellow pages, the white pages at the hotel to see if there was any other custodios. There never was. So, LinkedIn is the best form of contact, you know, and I'm on it continuously and always. So, yep.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. You guys have to connect with Marcia on LinkedIn. She shares a lot of valuable information. But Marcia, thank you so much for spending some time with us. It's been so much fun sitting down and having the chance to interview you today. And thank you to our listeners as well. Like time is a really valuable gift that we can give one another. So we appreciate y'all spending some time with these two Texas gals from the workforce ecosystem. Thank you, Marcia.
Yes. No, thank you. Honestly.
Absolutely. And we will see you guys on the next episode of the Ivy Podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.